This podcast is brought to you with thanks to Systema, managed IT and cloud services.
Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome everyone to a wonderful Wednesday. You're on FNR Football Nation Radio, Australia's first and only 24-hour radio station dedicated to the beautiful, beautiful game of football. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego and this is Calcio Cafe, the only breakfast show dedicated to football across Australia. We are your voice of football, so give us a call on any of our live shows today on 03-99-44-99-99 at 03-99-44-99-99, and you can also tweet us at FNR _ radio if you want to get involved on our social media platform, Twitter. Coming up in this hour in the cafe, it's another big one. We've got FNR News with Athos Syrianos in a moment. Chris McLaughlin, senior football reporter at the BBC Sport. He's going to have a bit of a chat to us about Stevie Gerrard's announcement as a new Rangers coach in the Scottish Premier League. In Planet NPL, we catch up with Lou Ricciuto, president of Adelaide Victory in the NPL 2 in South Australia. In Club Corner, we chat to Yanni Avyliotis, the president of Bunyip and District Soccer Club. And, of course, a wonderful book has been released in the last week or so. It will be released by the end of May, rather. Encyclopedia of Socceroos from Fair Play Publishing. And we've got their author of the book, Andrew Howe, joining us in the show this morning. So it's a massive, massive morning in the cafe. So let's get into it.
Oh, that is breathtaking.
FNR. Football Nation Radio.
Yes, joining me in the cafe first thing this morning is the smiling Athos Syrianos from the newsroom. Good morning to you, Athos.
Good morning. Not sure if you'd be smiling if you're a West Brom fan at the moment. Unfortunately, the Baggies have the second side to be relegated after the result between Southampton and Swansea did not go their way. Manolo Gabbiadini scoring the only goal in that game to make sure Southampton are safe for another season.
Tadic. Long. Romeu, Austin, and Gabbiadini! How do you put a price on that goal? Is that the knockout blow for Swansea City?
With thanks to Optus Sports for that audio there. It's not quite the knockout blow for Swansea City. They still have bottom-placed Stoke to play in the final game of the year, and obviously have to get a win there and hope that Huddersfield did not get a point against either Chelsea or Arsenal. So it actually is quite plausible that Swansea stay up.
Absolutely. And imagine having the Welsh derby next year, Swansea versus Cardiff, because Cardiff's obviously coming up into the Premier League after being promoted from the Championship too. So, look, at least we've got one on the edge of your seat type scenario for the weekend. I love it when, and then really a couple of weeks ago, we really didn't know what was going to happen, but with Stoke falling away the way they have, and West Bromwich Albion, their revitalisation ended, unfortunately, with Southampton winning. But they, were playing great football towards the end of the season, getting some big, big results against Manchester United and I think Tottenham. They beat Tottenham the other day, and just imagine if they just got one or two of those results early in the season.
If you're a West Brom fan, do you take any optimism heading into the next season in the Championship that they can get back into the Premier League?
Oh, look, good question. I mean, what we've seen with Sunderland being relegated from the English Premier League and then the following season, I mean, this season they've been relegated to League One. So it's amazing. It's no guarantee that you can come straight back up. It needs a really, really strong club culture to be able to fail in the English Premier League, go down to the Championship, recalibrate, and then come straight back up again. It seems like if they can keep the team together that they can do it, but too much went wrong at that club, and I'm pretty sure that there'll be a clean out of players because of that reason and maybe clean out of coaching staff. And I don't think I think they've still got a caretaker coach involved there, haven't they? I don't think they've really appointed anyone permanently. So they've got big decisions to make, West Bromwich Albion, and you can get it so, so wrong in the Championship. There's no guarantee you're going to come straight back up.
That's absolutely right. And I think West Brom and Stoke, I think they got promoted together in the 2007-08 season. So they've been a Premier League side for about 10 years now. I wonder whether a sense of complacency grew that, you know, that we are a Premier League side now. We're probably not going to get relegated, as opposed to a side like Burnley who are constantly up and down and, You know, I wonder whether that kind of mentality has an impact as to whether, you know, when they get relegated, as to whether they come back straight away.
I think you've got to know your identity as a football club. Burnley understands their identity. Route one, big guys with sharp elbows. We go to Tottenham and we bully them. They come to us and we just storm over the top of them. And we'll get our results. And Sean Dyche has done a fantastic job there at Burnley because they understand what club they are. They understand what makes them successful. It's where you try and transition from the Route 1 British football that's made you successful, got you where you are, to suddenly we want to play a little bit of tiki-taka, right? Everton's tried it, and look at them. They've had a real problems this year. They're staying up in the English Premier League, but they've got to go back to what they know. West Bromwich Albion probably tried a little bit of that, not to the extent that Everton have, but West Bromwich Albion tried to do that, and also Stokes tried to do it, and they've lost their identity. I think you've just got to understand who you are as a club, and you've got to have a really long-term plan and long-term strategy to be able to change that from suddenly being a Route 1 typical British club, the way they play football, to suddenly a team that wants to play football, a Manchester City type team, you know, that wants to play football and win games that way. I think West Ham's another club that's lost its way by way of identity, but they've lost their way for a long, long time. So, very, very disappointing for a lot of the fans out there. And when you get disgruntled fans, it's all about them not understanding what you're trying to do. West Bromwich Albion fans, you ask whether they'd be happy or confident they'll come straight back up. I think they're going to be really unhappy that that club's lost its identity. Hopefully they'll be able to recalibrate back in the Championship because they're a decent-sized club. I still remember as I was growing up, there, I thought it was before you were born. Cyril Regis, Laurie Cunningham, Brian Robson, all these great players. Ron Atkinson was their manager. Fantastic football-playing club at the Hawthorns. And because they were a terrific club, I think they got a lot of supporters around the world. But, I wouldn't be able to tell you who a player is at that club. You know, there's no – it's just foreigners come in, locals who are in for the big bucks have come in, and that's what it's led to.
Yeah, certainly a bit of soul-searching for both Stoke and West Brom. Only 6 wins out of the 37 games played so far. Well, moving right along to more of a happier story, and Samantha Kerr has scored her first goal for the Chicago Red Stars over the weekend, and this is how she did it.
Motz, driven ball, Kerr trying to get in behind. Kerr got a shot on, hit in! Sam Kerr scores her first for the Red Stars! Total silence at Wake Med Soccer Park, and Sam Kerr back to her old tricks.
A very classy finish there from the Julie Dolan medalist. She just seems to go and score and dominate wherever she goes, doesn't she?
Oh, she wouldn't have been very happy with her Asian Cup performance. The number of goals she scored, I think she scored a really important one against Japan in the group stages. But other than that, she came close a few times, but she would have been really disappointed with that. But from club football perspective, they can't stop her, can they?
No. It's just that, of course, and she has been a superstar at an international level as well. It's just a disappointing Asian Cup campaign that just didn't go quite the Matildas' way, but they have to move on now and look on to the World Cup. Another side that will have high ambitions and will look to move on after this year are Sydney FC, and they have re-signed defender Alex Wilkinson for a further 2 years, so he will be at the club now until he is 35 years old. So it's good to see Sydney, you know, maintaining a key player in their defence.
Oh, I think the big issue with Sydney is they've left all the re-signings to the end of the season. And that was easy for Graham Arnold to do. He had a job to go to after the Russian World Cup. He had that locked in already. A lot of these players didn't. So I don't know how many of these players who are out of contract, and I think there's a fair few at Sydney, they're going to maintain because of that. They would have been looking for their future weeks and weeks ago, maybe months ago.
Totally different to Newcastle, who had re-signed, I think, 18 to 20 players right before the grand final.
And what we're getting now, too, Athos, is we're starting to see some players being signed up in multi-year contracts rather than just the 1 year. So Jordan Elsie at Adelaide, for example, 3-year contract. Vedran Jedinovic, 4-year contract there at Western Sydney Wanderers. So we might be seeing a trend going the other way now, giving players a bit more security. But also these players are probably the players that are going to most likely command a fair transfer fee if they had to go overseas. That's why they want to lock him in over a long period of time. Anything else there, mate?
Well, Melbourne City, I don't think this has been touched on a whole lot, but they've acquired the services of Daniel De Silva, one of the other the bright young stars in Australian football. So they will have De Silva and Azani potentially lining up together, which is a great sight.
And, you know, don't forget Nathaniel Atkinson and these sort of younger guys coming through. I'm pretty sure Melbourne City, their, you know, club model is to get the best young people in Australia playing for them. And Danny De Silva, who's more than just young, he's had senior experience now, not only in the A-League, but also overseas. So that's a really good pickup. But anything else there, Matt?
No, that's all for now.
Thanks very much, Athos Syrianos from the newsroom. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to go over to the UK and speak to Chris McLaughlin, senior football reporter at the BBC. Of course, Stevie Gerrard has been appointed Rangers manager in the Scottish Premier League. We're going to talk to Chris all about that here on Calcio Cafe on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24-7, this is FNR Football Nation Radio, broadcasting live across Australia and live across the world. It's Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego. Coming up in the cafe very, very, very soon is Club Corner with Yanni Evliotis, the president of Bunyipin District Soccer Club. But first, let's go over to the UK and speak to the senior football reporter there at the BBC Sport, Chris McLaughlin. Good morning to you, or good evening to you there, Chris.
Evening, Carlos, or good morning to you.
Yes, thanks for joining us, mate. So Stevie Gerrard announced as the new Rangers manager in the SPL. What's been the response like at the appointment in the UK?
As you can imagine, lots of attention. It's his first job in senior management. He was the coach of the Liverpool under-18s. He turned down the opportunity to manage a couple of lower league sides in England. It came, to be fair, Carlos, it came as a real surprise, I think, to most people. Not only because he decided to jump into management now, I think people thought that he would maybe learn his trade a little more on the coaching side at Liverpool, but the fact that he has jumped straight into a very, very high-profile job here in Scotland. You know, of course, listen, Scottish football does not have the riches of the football in England, but let me tell you, in Glasgow, the rivalry between Celtic and Rangers, as you know, is huge, and he finds himself under massive scrutiny. But there's been a lot of interest in England, a lot of interest across Europe, and of course, the very fact I'm talking to you guys on the other side of the world shows just exactly the interest in this appointment.
Absolutely. Stevie Gerrard being a legend that he is as a footballer, do you sense, I mean, you've reported on footballers and you know a number of them who graduate from playing to management, and some of them, you know, as footballers, basically were terrific footballers. They had a lot of confidence in themselves. They achieved a lot as footballers. Is there this sense with some of the top players that I was a great footballer, I can easily become a great manager?
Yeah, listen, sometimes I think that's right. You know, he comes with a name, but let's face it, Stephen Gerrard is not going to be playing for Rangers. Although the way he looks at the moment, he looks as if he probably could pull a jersey back on and play quite easily. But no, listen, there is so many unknowns with regards to this. It never just follows that because you're a fabulous footballer that you become a fabulous manager. That remains to be seen. I think from a Rangers point of view, they think what mitigates the risk with regards to this being his first job in management is the fact that he can probably attract some big names. You know, if you're a young, up-and-coming football player wondering where your next move might be, it's very tempting to know that you're walking in the morning to a dressing room that is Stephen Gerrard as your manager. So I think Rangers are banking on the fact that because they don't have a lot of money at the moment, Rangers have had their financial issues, they're kind of banking on the fact that Stephen Gerrard can attract some top talent.
There was a sense there, I think, around the world that Liverpool were probably priming him up for, you know, the manager's job there eventually, with the likes of Real Madrid circling around Jurgen Klopp, but with also the uncertainty around the future of someone like Zinedine Zidane there, or maybe after the next manager. Jurgen Klopp's just doing such a wonderful job with Liverpool that he will be in great demand, and there was probably a bit of a sort of another plan for Stevie Gerrard. Is it better for him to go away from Liverpool and spend some time in the hotbed of the Glasgow football environment there with Rangers, and then come back to Liverpool a better manager?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that's the feeling. There is no doubt that Steven Gerrard goes on to be a success in Glasgow, then he will be linked to the club where he spent a long, long time as a player. He became a Liverpool legend there, didn't he? So, no, I don't think there's any doubt. It's a strange place, Glasgow, and a strange place, Glasgow Rangers, to cut your teeth as a manager. That's one of the real interesting points to this. But you're right. Steven Gerrard, of course, has designs on becoming a manager. That means he probably has designs on becoming the Liverpool manager. And I'm sure the Liverpool fans, to a man and to a woman, would want to see him become a successful manager and end up back at Anfield. There's absolutely no doubt about that. It all depends, I suppose, on just how he does in Glasgow. I mean, listen, Glasgow as a city, as a footballing city, can make you or break you. I've watched managers come in with huge reputations and leave the city absolutely broken because of the pressure. Now, Steven Gerrard is used to the pressure. He said that already in his first press conference. He said, look, I was the England captain. I was the Liverpool captain. I enjoy pressure. Let me tell you, the pressure is very, very different in Glasgow.
Mm. There's this real link between Scousers and Scottish and Scotland, really, because we've seen over the years with Liverpool some of the great footballers that came from Scotland to play for the club, especially in the 80s under the Kenny Dalglish era.
Yep.
Some of the great players, even before that, Alan Hansen and a few others. But Gary McAllister's there with him as the assistant. Mm-hmm. Is there some sort of affinity, understanding from Stevie Gerrard of the Scottish mentality through the experience he's had with the teammates he's played with and made him more comfortable about taking this job?
Yeah, well, not only that, to add further intrigue to this, Stephen Gerrard has often been seen at the Celtic Rangers fixture in the Celtic end. Now, as you can imagine, the Celtic fans have been having some fun with that fact over the past week or so. So, listen, he is well aware Liverpool and Glasgow are not too far apart. You can get to Liverpool from Glasgow in 2.5 hours. So it's not a million miles away. And you know, the Old Firm fixture is on TV, and he's well aware of the pressure, the expectations that come along with that job. The problem he has, of course, is that he's up against a very, very successful manager in Brendan Rodgers. And hey, guess what? He was his manager at Liverpool. So that adds huge intrigue where no further intrigue is really needed, to be honest.
The commerciality of the Glasgow derby between Rangers and Celtic is something that obviously the money men there in the Scottish football now obviously looking to get back to that point for many, many decades. And with the Rangers being relegated and have them fight their way back up and rebuild the club, I think they're probably not at that level yet. Do you think that Stevie Gerrard will play his part in that rivalry? Because I don't think it doesn't seem like he's got a mean bone in his body, and he knows Brendan Rodgers. I think they respect each other. Are we going to get the angst in the media prior to games and after games that really will fuel the fire of a Glasgow derby again?
Well, to be fair, whether he wants to be part of that or whether he doesn't want to be part of that, let me tell you, he will be part of that. He won't have any say in it. Because that is just the nature of the beast in Scottish football. The rivalry is massive in Glasgow, and he will instantly become part of that. Now, he knows that to win favour with the Rangers fans, he has to become part of that. He has to become part of the fabric at Rangers. And that means when you are a part of the fabric at Rangers, you have to topple Celtic. So he's well aware of that. He knows that he's up against a huge challenge being up against his former manager, Brendan Rodgers, but he says it's something he's relishing.
Now, Chris, where is the Scottish Premier League at the moment by way of standard? Of course, back in the 80s, it was a solid and strong competition. Celtic and then Rangers developed great players that went on, and some really good players went the other way back to the Scottish Premier League. But in more recent, maybe in the last decade or so, a lot of question marks over the quality that's been on display in the Premier League. Tell us where that league is at the moment, and also Rangers as a club.
Yeah, well, listen, they are dwarfed in terms of the financial clout, and it's, we all know that it's finances that drive football these days. To give you an indication, our neighbours in England, as we know, is the land of milk and honey when it comes to finances and football. The team that finishes at the very bottom of the English Premier League and is relegated into the English Championship receive around £95 million. Mm. Now, to put that in context, in Scotland, when you win the top league here, you get around £4 million.
Nah.
So that is the gulf that simply can't be bridged, in all honesty, but that's where they are. Within the footballing context of Glasgow, Celtic dwarf Rangers at the moment in terms of finances because they have been qualifying for the Champions League. That provides huge revenue as well, and Rangers have been starved of that. In fact, their chairman, just yesterday, the Rangers chairman said, look, we will not be running at a profit as a club. We will not be turning a profit until we get to the Champions League again. Mm. Now, the problem there is, to get to the Champions League, you have to finish first in Scottish football. And Celtic have been dominating that position for some time.
Well, let's hope that, with the appointment of Stevie Gerrard, we get to see the old Rangers and Celtic. We saw glimpses this season, by the way. There was one game in particular that was pretty tight, even though other games were blowouts.
Yeah.
Will he be given time at Rangers? Is it the sort of club that won't panic if he doesn't get results early?
That depends. That's the big question, isn't it? The problem is, there is a goodwill for Steven Gerrard. There's no doubt about that. So he has that in his favour. But if he starts the season poorly, if he is on the end of a thumping or a few thumpings at hands of Celtic, then questions clearly will start to be asked. But the goodwill that he has is clearly there. He needs to build on that by attracting top players and finding a way to get past Celtic and Brendan Rodgers.
Well, there's many millions of Liverpool supporters in Australia, Chris, and I think their second club now is Rangers in Scotland because of Stevie Gerrard. Thanks for joining us today. I look upon what he achieves next season with a great interest, mate, and you never know, 5 or 6 games in, depending on how he goes, I'll give you another call and maybe have a discussion about how he's going at that time.
Absolutely. I'll keep you updated. All the best, Carlos.
Good on you, mate. That's Chris McLaughlin, senior football reporter at the BBC, talking about Stevie Gerrard's appointment there at Rangers in Scotland. Let's take a break. And when we come back, it's Club Corner with Yanni Avaliotis, the president of Bunyip and District Soccer Club, here on FNR Football Nation Radio, Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego.
Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24/7 is the FNR Football Nation Radio, broadcasting around Australia live and around the world live. This is Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego. Coming up in the cafe is Lou Ricciuto, president of the Adelaide Victory Football Club in NPL 2 or State 2 in South Australia in Planet NPL. But first, it's Club Corner, and in Club Corner today we're talking to Yanni Avaliotis, the president of Bunyip and District Soccer Club. Good morning to you, Yanni.
Good morning, Carlos.
Yeah, thanks for joining us this morning, mate. I know nothing about Bunyip and District Soccer Club. That's why I'm really looking forward to talking to you. Tell us a little bit about its history and who was involved in setting it up.
Yeah, well, look, we're only probably about a 10-year-old club now. I think we're humble beginnings in 2008. In particular, a lady by the name of Mary Cole and the Arrigo family down there in Bunyip, they held their first meeting in Mary Cole's residence, actually. And both of them ended up putting in some startup funds to get the Bunyip District Soccer Club up and running. A couple of other, names there was a gentleman by the name of Adrian Gaddy, who up until recently was serving as our president of back in those startup days.
And
so celebrating our 10th year this year.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's fantastic, which means it's quite a young club, to tell you the truth. So what was the need? Was it just because this group of people just love football and they wanted to introduce it to the area, or was there a demand for the game for a community club like Bunyip?
To be honest, I think it all comes back to a gentleman, Tony Arrigo, who was part of that Arrigo family. He just had a passion to establish a junior soccer club for a number of years, and it finally came into form for him back in 2008, which is why he obviously put in his own sort of funds to get that started. And yeah, pretty humble beginnings from you know, not many players to what we are now. So
what's it look like now there, Yanni? How many teams, how many players registered?
Look, at the moment, we've got about 110 players registered. Our seniors and reserves playing Division 5 in the Victorian State League in the South East League, which is their second year in that now, which we finally got into. From a junior perspective, it fluctuates a little bit, but this year we have an under-14 boys. We've got our first all-girls under-13, 14 girls team. We've got an under-12 sort of mixed team, if you like, as well as two under-9. So things are definitely picking up. Every year we're seeing more and more registrations, which is good.
I love the fact that you've got a full girls team at under-14 level. It means that you're going to have a nice little pathway for girls all the way to the seniors, especially if those girls want to keep on playing. And really at 14 years old, they tend to just build their passion rather than actually for it to diminish. Was it difficult for you to, you know, attract those girls, or did they come knocking on your door?
Look, we tried to get it up last year. It sort of didn't pan out for us. But one of the girls in the team just herself had a big passion for playing soccer and started getting into her friends and managed to drag down, I think, half a school to start that little team up so they could all play girls. And obviously the way the Matildas have been going has definitely put female soccer on the map.
So, yeah, I was going to ask you, the motivation for these young girls coming to your club, is it just to have fun, meet friends, play football with their friends? As you said, it's all, you know, a lot of the girls come from the same school, so they'd know each other. Or is there a greater motivation, W League and Matildas?
Oh, look, there's definitely W League and Matildas. I mean, look, without the Matildas doing as well as they have, we probably wouldn't have seen such a big interest, especially out in Bunyip, from a girls' perspective. Obviously, Bunyip being mainly an AFL-type little town. I mean, because the town's only about 3,500 people. So obviously, that's why we try and incorporate the district. I myself travel, you know, a good half hour, 40 minutes just to get to Bunyip to help out with the club. My kids play there as well. It's just a good family atmosphere. So, yeah, and I think that's probably what's driven a lot of the girls as well.
So, Yanni, given that you're driving half an hour, these days where everyone's really busy, there's work commitments, there's family commitments, driving half an hour, depending on the traffic, might even be more, to take your kids there. What attracted you to the club? Did you become president first and then they just started playing, or were they there already and you became president after that?
No, look, my kids were there. It was actually my son had a passion for soccer, so I took him around to a few clubs to have a look, and he just decided he wanted to play for Bunyip. I think he just liked the fact that it was a little country town. Our setup's a little bit different to everyone else in the sense, you know, you actually get that country town feeling, very family sort of orientated club, and being for a not-for-profit club as well, he just loved the atmosphere, and they were very welcoming. And after that, I sort of started getting involved with the committee until, you know, 3-4 years later, now I've been lucky enough to be president.
And you'll still be president in 10 years' time, Yanni. What's the club going to look like then? Are you going to have greater aspirations than just be a community club, which is not a bad, by the way, not a bad position to be.
Yeah.
Community clubs do a lot of fantastic, you know, they provide a fantastic service for people in the community. But the transition from community club to a club with more aspiration to get up the leagues, is that something that might happen in the next 10 years or so?
Oh, definitely. Look, our aspiration is to just keep building the club up. And as more and more people sort of start moving towards that little zone there of Bunyip and the surrounding towns, and that'll definitely happen. From a seniors perspective, we definitely want to move up in the leagues. We'd love to get a seniors female team as well happening, eventually to hopefully, you know, be able to have at least one, if not more, teams in almost every age group. But look, we're definitely looking that way. Very recently, we were lucky enough to get a government grant along with our Cardinia Shire Council of $1.9 million to go in and build a pavilion with club rooms, function rooms, and what have you. So that'll start up in a couple of years. Couple of months, and that will definitely start putting us more on the map.
Fantastic. Obviously, the big issue in Australian football at the moment, especially at the grassroots level, is facilities. For you guys to get a $1.9 million grant, that really is a model for clubs all around Australia. Just before I let you go, Yanni, was it a dollar-for-dollar type scenario with council?
Yeah, well, look, pretty much it was. And, I mean, I've got to give full credit there to the past president, Adi Rugatti, who really worked really tirelessly on getting us that grant. And, you know, constant meetings with council, constant, you know, letters to council members, politicians, and it finally came through. And now we're just waiting to start digging up and get that thing happening. So,
fantastic, mate. Well, congratulations on what's happening there at Bunyip. I look forward to seeing this club grow. You're doing a wonderful job for the community there, and congratulations on that $1.9 million grant. It's only the start of big, big things. Yanni, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Carlos. Thanks for your time.
Good on you, mate. That's Yanni Avliotis, the president of Bunyip and District Soccer Club here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to go over to Adelaide to speak to president of Adelaide Victory in the NPL 2 or State 2 in South Australia, Lou Ricciuto, here on Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego.
Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24-7, this is FNR Football Nation Radio, broadcasting live across Australia and live across the world. It's Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego. Coming up very, very soon in the cafe, it's Andrew Howe, the author of Encyclopedia of Socceroos, and what a magnificent book that is from Fair Play Publishing. We'll be speaking to Andrew all about that very, very soon in the cafe. But first, it's Planet NPL, and today joining us in Planet NPL is Lou Ricciuto, president of Adelaide Victory in the State League 2 in South Australia. Good morning to you, Lou.
Good morning.
Yes, really great catching up with you again, mate. Halfway through, I think we're 10 games into the season and 5 wins and 4 losses. You're in mid-table in State League 2. What's your assessment on how the team's going so far this season?
Yeah, the team's been playing pretty well. We've had a couple of losses which were really unlucky, and we're in a good position to attack this because we're in sixth position with a game in hand. So hopefully we'll be in the top five.
Now, Lou, it's all or nothing really for Adelaide Victory this season. You've had some big wins, especially recently, but you've either won or lost. There's no draws. So you certainly do get entertainment there with Adelaide Victory when you go and see them play.
Oh, you sure? You really do. I mean, we play a good brand of soccer. It's very attacking. If we keep our shape a bit better than what we have been in the last month, we'll be okay. We'll definitely be in the top two. I'm pretty confident with that.
Coming into the season, obviously, you set your objectives as a club. Is this where you wanted to be at this point? A bit of a springboard to really having a crack at those top two positions, or were you expecting to really lead the ladder at this time of the season?
I thought that would be in the top three by this time of the season, but we're still in a good position. We're only 4 points behind the second place side, so we're in a good position to attack it. So we're quite happy at the moment, so yeah.
So recruitment of players, obviously, in the off-season to plan for the new season. Have the recruitment of those players really paid off for the club?
They have, actually. We've got a very young side, but we've recruited a couple of gems, I think, and George Katsigiannis, who's, I think, one of the highest goal scorers in the league at the moment. And we've recruited also a young player on the flank in Vince Taladira, who's doing a really good job. So, yeah, we're quite happy with the recruits.
Now, Lou, you're a president of the club, so it's not only the men's senior team in the State League 2 that you're concerned about. How about the other teams in the club? How are they going at the moment, in particular the women's teams?
We haven't got a women's team at the moment, so I can't really tell you about the women's team. With the juniors and the 18s and reserves, they're all in good positions. Actually, we're playing really well all through the ranks because I've been to see a few matches in the last couple of weeks, and I think the club's going in a good direction.
And generally, the club, again, as I said, you're president, you're overseeing everything at the moment. What are the challenges that you're really set yourself to meet off the field this season?
Well, the challenges are to get more sponsorship. a really hard thing at the moment. I mean, businesses are tight, and also improving some of our infrastructure at our senior ground.
And what sort of strategy you put in place as far as that infrastructure is concerned? It's certainly a big issue with all the clubs we interview here on in Calcio Cafe, whether it be in the Club Corner or Planet NPL. Everyone has that issue throughout Australia. And the good thing at the moment, everyone is certainly focused on that, and they're instead of just complaining about it, they're trying to do something about it. What do you guys put in place to be able to meet that challenge?
Yeah, well, we're working with a few sponsors to bring in some money to help us fix up our changing rooms, and we're working with the government, and hopefully we can get some grants in the near future. But the ground actually, our ground is actually not too bad. It's probably NPL standard with lighting and everything. It's just more the just fixing up of the grandstand and the changing rooms that we need to work with.
And, of course, you talk about the pathways. I mean, part of the issue around facilities is you have decent facilities for your underage teams. Is the focus for Adelaide Victory to have your younger players coming through the ranks and representing the team at senior level?
Yes, definitely is. I think we've got four at the moment that are playing first team from our, that have come through our junior ranks. And we've probably got, I mean, I was actually watching our under-16s the other day, and there's probably four or five in there that will definitely be playing reserves next year. So, yeah, we're in a good position in that respect, that we've got some players coming through, and that will help us in the long run.
So what are you doing about qualified coaches and stuff, Lou? Are you happy with the array of coaches you have coaching the underage teams? Because obviously it's an investment for the future. If you get the decent coaches there that know what they're doing and they really understand their team and they spend the time to really develop those players, it really does benefit the club in the long run.
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, we work with them once a month as well with our coaches, and we go through things that we want to see out there. And plus, I mean, the only problem with the coaching is that it's a little bit expensive to put them through those courses, but most of our coaches are a senior level or above, so we're quite happy with that at the moment.
And where do you find them? I mean, has it been difficult for you to recruit these coaches?
Well, it definitely is. I mean, there's not many fathers actually that do coach our teams. Most of them are from outside, and we interview at the beginning of the year, and we normally get a whole range of coaches coming in. But obviously, with the prices of courses, their price to coach teams is really high.
Absolutely, it's certainly a big issue that is on the agenda at the moment. So not only fees for players to play in clubs, but also the cost of upskilling yourself as a coach is really exorbitant in Australia. We've got to really look at that. Lou, before I let you go, you've got Adelaide University this week. Is it going to be another goal fest for you guys?
Oh, I hope so. can never tell. I mean, like I said, we've got a young side. We've had a couple of losses in between where a young side does sort of, falter a little bit. But we're hoping to win 4-5-0 this week. But if we don't, on to next week.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think a success would be if you got a draw too, because you've had a draw season. But Lou,
I prefer to win. Yeah. Prefer to win. Yeah.
Well, you are called Adelaide Victory, so I think that suits the name better. Lou, thanks for joining us today, mate. I know we spoke to you before the season started, and you know, it's good catching up 10 games in, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again by the end of the season.
Thank you. I appreciate the call. Thank you.
Good on you, mate. That's Lou Ricciuto, president of Adelaide Victory in State League 2 in South Australia in Planet NPL today. Let's talk a little bit of Socceroos.
Oh, that is breathtaking.
FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Yes, joining us now is the author of Encyclopedia of Socceroos, Andrew Howe. Good morning to you, Andrew.
Good morning, Carlos. Great to speak to you.
Yeah, great to speak to you, mate. And congratulations on a much-needed book. I, over the years, have been able to collect some, I call them the gems that are out there, because there's not many of them, of people trying to write something along the lines of what you've put together. But your book is magnificent. The Encyclopedia of Socceroos, 400 pages, 200,000 words, 300 photos and diagrams, and weighing 2.2 k. It really is a life's work, isn't it, Andrew?
Yeah, it is. It's my little baby, or big baby, 2.2 Ks, as you mentioned there, Carlos. Encyclopedia of Socceroos being launched very shortly, and it's basically a labour of love from myself. Been working on this for 25 years, really. Mm. It all started as you'd mentioned yourself, just you've mentioned in the past. You want to know more about the history of this game we love. When I fell in love with the game, a little bit later in life than a lot of other fans I know, as a late teenager, I wanted to know more about the game. There wasn't much out there. There wasn't much in the way of books or guides, yearbooks, that sort of thing. So I basically set about starting my own collection of statistics and information. And yeah, there's one output from all this with the release of the Encyclopedia of Socceroos this month.
Mm. Look, the history of Australian football, I've discovered doing this job at FNR over the last 8 months or so we've been on air, is, 1800s. Some of the clubs in Australia is as old or even older than some of the clubs overseas in the Mecca of football. How far back does your book, though, go with the Socceroos?
Yeah, okay. So it is an encyclopedia which covers every player that has played for the national team. Now, when we talk about, and that's going back to 1922, so the national team played its first match in 1922 when the 15 players set out from Sydney to New Zealand and played over around 15 games in a tour of New Zealand in 22. So we're talking about players that were playing with some of those old clubs you mentioned from the very early 90s. So our first captain of an A international match, Alec Gibb, he came out to Australia from Scotland. Alec was born in Ireland to Scottish parents, so grew up in Scotland, came out to Australia and started playing in Ipswich in 1911. And as I say, captain, first A international match in 1922. So we're talking about players that started their careers over 100 years ago. The first national team game was played just under 100 years ago in 1922. Now, I mentioned, it lists every player who's played played for Australia in an international match. We've got over 900 such players. The core of the encyclopedia, though, is a biography of the 592 players that have played at least one A international match. So we've got stats and a bio for each one of those almost 600 players.
And beautifully put together, really, the publisher there, Fair Play Publishing, has done a wonderful job putting this together, too, as far as the way it looks. Is there one story that really none of us would know about unless they did the work that you've done that actually really comes to mind as an amazing story that, is very little, much not known by people who even have followed the game for as long as I have over the years?
I think readers will find out a lot, especially about the earlier players. So we think of, a lot of us think of back in the day, not much happened in terms of players' careers, in terms of travelling and that sort of thing. But players did travel a lot back then, and a lot of players migrated to Australia to become Australians, proud Australians, and end up playing for the national team. One example is Aku Roth. Okay, so Aku, A-K-U, Roth. He was born in Warsaw, in what was then Russia, in the early 1900s. He came to Melbourne in the 1920s after growing up in Leipzig, Germany. He came to Melbourne with a cousin to work in the wholesale fur trade, and ended up playing for Australia and Melbourne club side Harkoa. From my research, he's the first Jewish player to play for the Socceroos. He ended up playing for Harkoa, as I mentioned, in Melbourne. The main Sydney and Melbourne Parkoa clubs played for a trophy called the AK or AN Roth Trophy for several decades, and that was named in honour of Aku Roth, who played for Australia back in the 1930s.
See, the problem with doing a hard copy book the way you have, even though it does look fantastic, is the minute it's published is the minute you get a new Socceroo coming in to start playing. We'll probably get a few new ones at this World Cup. Have you started the second edition yet?
Yeah, I have actually. Okay, yeah, it was always going to be, we have to call it a cut-off date for a hard copy publication. So it's the almost 600 players who played in the international until the end of 2017 was our sort of close-off day. We are releasing a World Cup version, though, so we will be Fair Play Publishing, the niche publisher of good football books. We'll be publishing a World Cup version in the lead-up to Russia 2018. So look out on the Fair Play Publishing website, fairplaypublishing.com.au, for more information about that version of the encyclopedia.
Okay, and the book is going to be available for people to buy by the end of May, I believe.
Our official launch date is the 25th of May. So we're launching the book at five or six events around Sydney, starting with an event at Club Marconi on the 25th of May, where books will be available at these events. Sydney, Newcastle, Melbourne, Ipswich, just outside of Brisbane, and Adelaide are the confirmed launch events over the next month. And in addition to being able to get those books at those events, they're available online via fairplaypublishing.com.au, via Amazon, and through good bookstores as well.
Well, Andrew, congratulations on the book. The game really needed a book like this. You and Fair Play Publishing have delivered this book. It's fantastic. Those people who have at all love their Australian football need to get a hold of this book, and I think it'll sell out very, very quickly. So get that second edition up and running very, very soon, Andrew. Thanks for joining us today. And again, congratulations on what you've been able to put together.
Wonderful. Thanks for your support, Carlos, and thank you for FNR Radio. I'm enjoying it, loving it.
Thanks very much, Andrew. Speak soon.
See you, mate.
That's Andrew Howe, the author of Encyclopedia of Socceroos, and it is an encyclopedia. 592 players who have represented our country. Every one of them has a story. Plenty of photos. It's just a terrific book to have in your collection and also read. It's not just an encyclopedia. There's stories, settlement stories, migrant stories of people who come to Australia and actually represented our country and the green and gold in very, very big games. That brings an end to Calcio Cafe for today. You could podcast the show on iTunes and SoundCloud. So until this time tomorrow, may you have a fantastic day in football.
Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.